Ryan McDonald, who is with us, you're a scientist, an astrophysicist, and also someone who's put himself forward as a candidate for a human mission to Mars. Is the science that Kevin is alluding to there what attracts you, or is it something else that makes you want to be one of those pioneers?
Well, I think the science is certainly one of the largest driving personal factors. And this question of whether we're alone in the universe and if there is life on Mars, does it share a common origin with life here on the Earth, or is it entirely genetically distinct? That's a question that's driven my focus in science for, well, for as long as I can remember, really. It's why I want to work on exoplanets, effectively.
But planets that are outside our own solar system.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, distant planets.
But I think there's the wider picture, which I think is the inspiration factor, which we'll come on to a bit more later.
The idea that we can establish a home from home on another planet, so that if things really turn nasty here for whatever reason, we can bail out over there. This is sort of dubbed the lifeboat scenario, isn't it?
Well, the worrying thing is that we know from the fossil record that 99.9% of all species that have existed on Earth have gone extinct at one point. And particularly if we look at the discoveries that we've made from statistics from the Kepler Space Telescope, looking for planets orbiting other stars since 2009, it seems to be implying that there could be 40 billion Earth-sized planets in the habitable zones of their stars, and yet we've not seen any evidence to date of life elsewhere in the universe. So that could potentially mean that we're extraordinarily special, and so I would argue that we have almost a moral obligation to protect not just ourselves, but life as a whole here on the Earth.
Jill, where does the politics sit on this?
With regards to the lifeboat scenario, that is one that's used often to justify the idea that we need to start colonizing planets elsewhere. I would just say that I think there's a couple of political and ethical concerns here. First of all, there are opportunity costs when we spend on going to other planets, and it makes me a little bit uncomfortable, the idea that this makes our own planet sort of disposable or that we're giving up on it. And so I think, although I'm generally in favor of space exploration and eventual colonization, I think that we need to not forget our home planet and the value of that. And secondly is this issue of the inherent value of landscapes and environments outside of Earth and our ethical obligations to them. So if we go to a planet, I think there's a sliding scale of ethical obligations to them, depending on whether or not it's a dead environment or if there's a biosphere with some sort of life, whether or not there's sentient life, intelligent life. But I don't think we should automatically assume the arrogance of, in order to need to preserve ourselves because we've caused problems on our own planet, on planet Earth, that we automatically have the right to go out and colonize other planets as a backup.
Richard?
Well, I mean, this lifeboat idea has, I mean, lots of great people have said this. Perhaps Mars shouldn't be the ultimate destination, though, if you're talking about a lifeboat for Earth. And maybe we should think of it as stepping stones. So you go the Earth and you keep the Earth, because everyone who looks down on the Earth, every astronaut, all they talk about is not how great the moon is or how great the space station is, because it's clearly not. It's how brilliant the Earth is when you look at it. So let's not forget the Earth. That's really important. But maybe you should look at stepping stones. So you say, right, we've got the space station. You then go to the moon. You then use the moon to Mars. You then maybe have some sort of giant starship. You start to look at ways of leaving the solar system, because frankly, I mean, Mars is horrible. I mean, it's dead, it's barren, it's bleak, it's desolate, there's not enough sunlight, it's rusty, it's a grim place. You would not want to stay there for long. But if you can use it as a stepping stone beyond that, then the lifeboat starts making sense. You start talking about colonies that could leave the solar system, that could go out to the galaxy, and we could colonise the galaxy, colonise the universe.
Ryan, it doesn't sound terribly inviting as your future home, the picture that Richard's painting.
Well, surprisingly, Mars is actually the most habitable planet in the solar system apart from the Earth.
You don't have many to choose from, have you, really?
We have to just look, say, the day on Mars, for instance, it's 24 hours with an extra 36 minutes or so, so we don't have to do any incredible crazy engineering like altering the spin of a planet like you'd have to do on Venus. Incidentally, you're not going to be set on fire immediately on the surface of Mars or be crushed by the pressure like you would on Venus either. Mars, crucially, everything we're learning about it seems to be suggesting that it was a more habitable planet around 3 to 4 billion years ago. Particularly, we've been learning this from Curiosity. And so with regards to the legal implications, potentially, of should we be modifying environments or landscapes on Mars, perhaps we could consider that what we're actually doing is just restoring and fixing Mars to how it was billions of years ago.
Jill, where do we stand on the idea of what the picture that Ryan's painting, which is we go to Mars and we basically mess with it to make it more Earth-like?
There's a couple of things that come to mind. First of all, I think it's worth questioning who it is that we're going to be sending out. I mean, they would essentially be the vanguard of humanity. And, you know, do we want this to be done by countries or companies and so on? And the other thing is there is a legal infrastructure that's been in place since the 60s and the 70s, which establishes that outer space is neutral territory, including celestial bodies, and specifically that nation states can't lay claim to celestial bodies. I don't think that this is going to restrict potential future colonization, and I think it's an infrastructure that we need to work within. It's governed by five main treaties, four of which have been widely ratified. But we will need to start sort of unbundling what that means in terms of mining the resources, individual countries are required to be responsible for the objects that are launched into outer space and have legal liability responsibilities in case things go wrong. If we've got humans up there, there's going to be issues like criminal liability. So there's a lot of legal issues that are going to have to be unpacked and overlapped on top of this pre-existing deep legal infrastructure that we've had in place for the last 50 years or so.
Mind you, if Carolyn's robots take over, then we may end up having to have robot courts, mightn't we? Carolyn, just looking at the practicalities, though, it sounds lovely. Let's turn Mars into a home from home by terraforming it. Is that reasonable? Is that scientifically plausible to do that on the scale of a whole planet?
Well, I guess it depends how much of a rush you're in. You know, if it really is a lifeboat, well, then I think we're all shot because it's going to take, I would guess, several millennia to happen. If you want to terraform a whole planet, you're talking about changing its climate, changing its surface. So not only do you have to thicken and enrich the atmosphere, you have to make it warmer. You need to perhaps introduce some greenhouse gas, you know, methane, ammonia, that warms up the carbon dioxide, thickens the atmosphere. There's a lot that's got to happen, and we could do it. I'm not saying it isn't technologically possible, and I do share a lot of Jill's reservations about, you know, whether we should do it and just all of that. But a key thing is that Mars does not have a strong magnetic field. It doesn't have the magnetosphere. So even if you build up this wonderful atmosphere, you warm up the planet, you need to retain that atmosphere.
I was going to say, how do you stop that atmosphere being whipped away by the very process that has left Mars this prune of a planet that it is right now?
As Ryan was saying, Mars was once a much more hospitable planet. It had this thick atmosphere. You know, it had the volcanic activity. We even think it had a strong magnetic field, but it doesn't now. And so you're leaving this wonderful new atmosphere being stripped away. So perhaps if you're really going to do it, maybe you are going to be terraforming Mars, but maybe not start off with the whole planet. Maybe start off with a few select biomes. Perhaps, as Richard suggests, start off with the moon. Find a nice crater near some resources, near some sunlight. Do the terraforming, or, you know, have a try at terraforming on a very local scale within easy reach of Earth, and then move on to doing some similar things on Mars, building these biomes, doing things slowly rather than just wading in and potentially wrecking a whole planet. Because, you know, again, as Jill said, our track record on Earth isn't brilliant. So we need to be very sure about what we're doing.